Good afternoon. It's 4:30 and 68 degrees in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Leanne Akers.
And I'm Logan Pemberton.
Most teachers spend their first few years while they're in the classroom also taking additional coursework.
A Frankfurt lawmaker says recommendations to fix the ailing pension system could cause big problems.
Kentucky's Attorney General has been asked to investigate a private meeting in the State House.
Four people are facing federal prison time after a 2016 overdose death.
Kentucky drivers could be getting a new license plate.
The city of Grayson will implement a new restaurant tax October 1st.
In sports, the Reds swept the Brewers in their series at Great American Ballpark.
Bud Luke has the stock report.
Partly cloudy tonight with lows in the mid-40s. Stay tuned for an extended weather forecast after this news.
The recommendations to fix an ailing pension system in Kentucky are making a lot of people uneasy. That's according to Representative Derek Graham, who is a retired teacher from the Frankfort Independent School System. Graham tells Spectrum's News Pure Politics that the recommendation by the firm PFM were made without consulting members of the profession.
If you start off at a 21-year-old teacher, and the recommendations that they're making that you will teach until you're 65, most teachers will tell you that that's an impossible choice. Some will do it, but it would be very difficult for an individual to teach over 44 years in order to make their retirement.
Graham admits that talk of changing KTRS funding could result in an avalanche of current teachers retiring. The Public Pension Oversight Board is currently studying the recommendations and will meet on September 25th.
Governor Matt Bevin and legislative leaders are considering all recommendations on solutions for the state's failing pension system. Bevin says financial groups are looking into numbers and facts about the pension system, but Kentucky's budget director says the state will need an extra $1 billion a year to fund and fix the system. Bevin says they will consider all recommendations, but those ideas don't get the final say.
They don't live here. They don't make the decision. They don't vote on this. They're not related to anyone who's retired. Their grandmother didn't retire.
Bevin says the legislature and his office will discuss all of the information, and they will ultimately make a decision on how to save the pension system. A special session is being held in October to discuss pension reform.
A watchdog group has asked Kentucky's Attorney General to rule whether the State House of Representatives broke the law by holding a private meeting to discuss the pension system. KNN's Will Clark has more.
The Bluegrass Institute Center for Open Governments filed an open meetings complaint in response to House members holding a close to the public meeting last week to discuss the state-funded analysis of the public retirement system. An attorney for House Speaker Jeff Hoover says the meeting didn't break the law because it was officially a meeting of the House Republican Caucus with the Democratic Caucus as invited guests. Hoover said it was necessary to close the meeting to prevent political grandstanding. Bluegrass Institute CEO Jim Waters said Hoover's reasoning is totally unacceptable. I'm Will Clark.
One woman has been sentenced and another has entered a guilty plea in U.S. District Court in connection with the August 2016 drug overdose death of an Augusta woman in Mason County. According to the Maysville Ledger, Amanda Hill Borgman died in August of 2016 due to an overdose of a combination of fentanyl and heroin. 31-year-old Tiffany A. Prince of Louisville was sentenced to 3 years in federal prison and 5 years supervised released on August 25th. She was one of four individuals indicted in January on a number of drug-related charges associated with the death. Sentencing is set for October 31st for 24-year-old Kristen L. Bellamy of Maysville. 33-year-old Joshua D. Jett of Maysville entered a guilty plea and is scheduled to be sentenced on October 12th in federal court. 26-year-old Anthony L. Mason of Flemingsburg was sentenced to 60 months in federal prison in June.
An Eastern Kentucky county is joining a lawsuit against opioid distributors. WMKY's Cody Robinson reports.
Boyd is one of the several counties partnering with a Huntington-based law firm to combat the deadly opioid epidemic. County officials agreed to an offer made by Paul T. Farrell of Green, Ketchum, Farrell, Bailey, and Tweel on Tuesday, ensuring that corporate drug distributors will be sued for not properly monitoring and controlling the flow of drugs into states. Cabell County of West Virginia was the first to join the lawsuit, with more than 40 million doses of opioids being brought into the county from big distributors between 2007 and 2012. Boyd joins Cabell County and 40 others across five states that have also partnered with the law firm. The state of Kentucky had more than 1,400 overdose deaths in 2016 alone. If the case is successful, counties could be fully reimbursed for any monetary damages caused by the drug epidemic. Reporting for WMKY News, I'm Cody Robinson.
Four men are accused of gang raping a 15-year-old in London. According to the Herald Leader, Marty Phillips, Jericho Asher, Calvin Baker, and Tristan Oakley, all 19 years old, were each charged with first-degree rape. Baker and Phillips allegedly admitted a 15-year-old was very intoxicated when he had sexual intercourse with her, according to court records. Baker's and Phillips' court files said he and other men and teens were together at Phillips' residence on Chippewa Lane about 12:30 a.m. Tuesday. They were all allegedly drinking alcohol before the girl was attacked by the men. All four men are being held in the Laurel County Detention Center.
For the first time in 12 years, Kentucky drivers could be getting updated license plates for their vehicles. Spectrum News' Pure Politics reports the push comes from Department of Vehicle Regulation Commissioner John Mark Hack. He addressed the Interim Joint Committee on Transportation yesterday.
We last replated in 2005, and the reason for that is that restricted fund, that reflectorized plate fund, has been routinely swept during the budgeting processes for the last several legislative sessions. The results of not replating are pretty substantial, and they're pretty serious. They compromise public safety, they compromise bridge tolling, and they compromise Kentucky's public image.
Hack says the Commonwealth should replace the current license plates with a print-on-demand production and distribution system. He argues it would eliminate physical handling costs and save county clerks from dealing with auditable transactions, inventory management, and storage and security. Hack says the new plates would be sent directly to taxpayers through the postal system, and county clerks would maintain just two standard issue plates in their offices. He estimates the change would save the state road fund more than $320,000 per year.
People gathered outside the Lexington courthouse yesterday to protest the Trump administration's decision to end the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. The program provides protections for roughly 800,000 immigrants who were brought into the country illegally as children. Officials announced yesterday that DACA will end in 6 months. Lexington resident Nomi Laura Rojo says DACA helped her obtain a work permit and driver's license. She spoke to WYMT.
When our community is in attack, we need to come together. And more than anything, we need to let Congress know that we're not going to back down and that this is not going to stop us. It might be, you know, a stone in the road, but we're not going to let us fall from this.
While it's unknown how many Kentuckians will be affected by the rollback, Lexington immigration attorney Heather Haiti says her office represents more than 800 clients who are DACA recipients. Officials have not provided a clear answer on what would happen to the so-called Dreamers after their benefits expire. Anyone whose status expires by the deadline has 1 month to apply for a new 2-year permit.
The group Kentuckians for Better Transportation has announced it's launching a coalition to help prevent a serious decline in the state's infrastructure. Over 30 agencies representing manufacturers, farmers, economic development leaders, and transportation workers work to educate the public about the importance of a safe, adequate transportation system. They will also advocate for stable funding for roads, bridges, rails, among other things. KBT Executive Director Juva Barber says road fund losses threaten Kentucky's access to global markets.
We have recently experienced a more than $200 million per year decrease in Kentucky's road fund. That's more than $200 million that's not available for us to maintain the roads and bridges that we have or construct new roads and bridges that we need.
Among other issues, the state has 70 closed bridges, more than 1,100 structurally deficient bridges, and a billion-dollar road maintenance backlog.
A resurfacing project on the Kentucky 9 AA highway began last week, stretching from the Mason County line into Bracken County. According to the Maysville Independent, work will take several weeks and drivers can expect some minor delays. Rather than the traditional asphalt method, the project will be a chip seal resurfacing, which is less expensive. Nancy Wood is with the Kentucky Transportation Cabinet. She says the new method is a third of the cost of the regular asphalt method.
You're looking at about $50,000 a mile, and normally asphalt costs about $175,000 a mile. So it's a third less of the cost, and it's going to give the same life expectancy.
Along with flaggers controlling the traffic on both ends, the speed limit will be reduced to 45 miles per hour for 10 miles in Bracken County from the Mason County line. The project is expected to be finished by the end of the month.
A major summer bluegrass music festival will be calling Rowan County home next year. After dealing with flash flooding in June at the Carter County Fairgrounds near Grayson, the organizers of Rudy Fest have announced that the event will be held next summer on top of Poppy Mountain. The head of Downtown Moorhead Incorporated, Tony Pence, calls that exciting news.
That'll represent 12,000 to 15,000 people into our community. It's a festival where they have 200-plus RVs already sold, campsites already sold, their lineups already set. So that's a nice new event that'll happen here in Round County. It'll be June the 19th or so, I think, is the date for it. That week, it's in a week-long event, so you'll have people here in the county extra for, you know, a 20-day period of time or so.
No one was injured during this year's flooding at Rudy Fest, although dozens of vehicles and campers were wrecked.
The Grayson City Council passed the second reading of the restaurant tax ordinance that will go into effect on October 1st. The 3% tax will be levied on all restaurant-type food sales in the city. Mayor George Steele says restaurants will make payments to the tourism group each month.
The tourism people did really a lot of research on this before they even brought it to the council. And they even had a CPA to go over the numbers to make sure that they were pretty accurate with them. And the numbers they got based on the restaurants that we had in town at that time was right at $700,000 a year.
The Tourism Commission has mailed out information to restaurant owners on how to implement the new tax, and an information session is scheduled for September 21st. Steele expects the first payment to be made to the Tourism Commission on October 15th.
The Carter County Fiscal Court met on Thursday to adopt the 2017 property tax rates. Kenzie Thompson reports.
There weren't many changes to the 2017 tax rates from 2016. The only alteration is the Agriculture Extension Agency. Their rates increased by 0.00167 of 1 cent for real estate and 0.000966 for tangible property. They said that this was the lowest compensatory rate they could set, which resulted in the small increase. In 2016, the extension's tax rates were 0.0440 per $100 of valuation for real estate and 0.0643 for tangible property. This year, it increased to 0.04567 for real estate and 0.065266 for tangible property. The ambulance, health, and county taxes did not change. Reporting for WMKY News, I'm Kinsey Thompson.
Lewis County's Judge Executive Todd Ruckel says his county's new gun range is already bringing more visitors to the area. According to Ruckel, the range, which just opened earlier this summer, has received several calls from people inside and outside of the county interested in buying memberships. He believes it is creating a lot of positive publicity for Lewis County.
There weren't many changes to the...
It is. I think it's going to be one of those things that's just going to continue to grow. And, you know, with the things that's happened in our communities, you know, all around, you know, our region, along with even on the nation, you know, nationwide, you know, people want to protect their Second Amendment and their guns. And I think, you know, it's we've had great response, and I think it's just going to get more.
Lewis County's new gun range is located off Kentucky 59, just south of Vanceburg. The county is applying to the NRA for a $50,000 matching grant so it can make further improvements to the facility. They would include the installation of an electronic card swipe entry gate and a security system.
Maysville hopes it's found a way to keep its citizens from being bothered at home by door-to-door salespeople. Its city commission has passed a new ordinance that allows residents to sign up for a no-knock list. Licensed solicitors working in Maysville will be banned from attempting to sell their wares on the properties of those who have their names on that list. Mayor David Cartmell believes the measure will succeed in its intended goal.
Simply because we have so many complaints that we are very aware of, you know, what's going on. And like any small town, you know, people always give you the heads up when there's you know, any curious folks that are coming around knocking and trying to sell stuff. So, yes, I think it'll work.
According to Cartmell, several Maysville residents have complained to him that the number of door-to-door solicitors in the city have greatly increased in recent years.
Taking a look at the weather tonight, partly cloudy skies, slight chance of rain shower, low 47. Tomorrow, sunny along with a few clouds with a high of 69, winds at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Taking a look at the current temperatures, it is 68 degrees here in Moorhead, 71 degrees in Ashland, 69 degrees in Lexington and Winchester, and it is 67 degrees in Inez and Flemingsburg.
On our feature segment today, we have Neighbors, Adrian Swain's conversations with our diverse Appalachian community. In this, the second of three segments, Elena Volovich describes her first impressions of the United States as a teenager, the difficulties of life as a young adult after going back to Tajikistan, her return to Kentucky as a college student, and how she enabled her mother to come to the U.S. for her graduation.
Yes, I came to a small town in western Kentucky, and I was placed with an American family. I attended an American high school, and that was a cultural shock because kids my age drove cars, they were dating, and I had a limited pool of people I could date at that time in Tajikistan. Yeah. And there they spent time in other towns. They would just get in the car and go 40, 50 miles away to go watch a ball game, and to me that was just shocking. I grew a lot as a person during that year, but I also wasn't very happy with my family situation, the family I stayed with. So at the end of the year, I knew I had to go back to Tajikistan. I didn't want to break any rules, so that's what I did. I came back, and I got a job working as an interpreter at a local bank, and I was miserable. After tasting freedom, it's very hard to go back to things that are not free anymore. And I actually had to give away most of my American clothes because each time I would wear them in public, I would get yelled at, and who do you think you are, and all of those things. I worked at the bank for about 4 years, and then I got this strange letter in the mail, and it was from America, and the letter said, "Hello, my name is so-and-so. I used to see you at church back here in America, and I just wanted to wish you well." So I responded to that letter, and I said, "Thank you very much. I'm doing all right." And this lady and I corresponded for about 6 months before her son stepped in and said, "You know, you really should go back to school. You should really pursue higher education, and you should apply at a college here in America." And that's what I did. I applied at Murray State. Some people say, "Oh, I can never afford to study overseas." But there was a scholarship that came up. There was a job that came up that paid really well. Somebody gave me a loan. And all of those things fell into place, and I was able to come to study in America. And I give full credit to God for everything that happened. I cannot explain it in any other way. So I came to Murray State, and that chapter of my life I call freedom. I slept very little because I was working one or two jobs, sometimes even three. I was taking a lot of classes. I was volunteering to keep my scholarship. But finally, I felt accepted. Finally, I felt like people weren't judging me because of my ethnicity.
Studied what?
International business. I finished my bachelor's. Close to my graduation, I felt very strongly that my mother was supposed to come here to the United States, and we haven't seen each other for 4 years, and I just began praying about it. I sent her a letter on her birthday, and I said, "I have a gift for you, but it's too big for me to fit in any package, but it's a ticket to the United States to watch me graduate." And I took on all kinds of side jobs. I was cleaning houses, I was walking dogs, I was giving English lessons, Russian lessons. And a lot of people contributed very generously for her to come here. So she came to the United States, and again, her cultural shock was probably even bigger than mine because she's been experiencing prejudice against her for even longer than me. And she was shocked when I took her out for a walk at 8 in the evening, and she said, "Really, it's safe? We could go for a walk? We're not going to get shot at or yelled at?" And I said, "Yep, that's totally fine." The original plan was for her to go back to Tajikistan and wait until I would figure out my life, and then we would go from there. While she was visiting with me, there were two Russian pilots flying over Tajikistan, and they got caught by the Tajik government, and the accusations were that they were spying on strategic objects in Tajikistan. And it was widely publicized in the media, and there was a new wave of hatred against Russians, and it no longer became safe for her to go back. There used to be, I believe, about 800,000 Russians, and now it's maybe 8,000.
Out of a population of what?
7 million. And I just made a decision to apply for asylum for her. I knew she had enough evidence to prove that she's been going through persecution all of her life, just like I have, and I spent 3 years of my life working on that case.
She was applying
for asylum, for racial persecution, and also religious. Just plenty of evidence, all kinds of international reports.
Join us next Wednesday for the third installment of Neighbors with Elena Volovich. It's 4:51 and 68 degrees on the campus of Morehead State University. Braxton Howard has sports in 30 seconds.
Support for MSPR comes from The Bakery on Main, next to Pasquale's on East Main Street in Morehead. The Bakery on Main prepares made-from-scratch breads, cakes, pies, tarts, and cookies. Glazed, cream, and fruit-filled donuts made fresh Monday, Friday, and Saturday. Catering for weddings, birthdays, bridal, and baby showers. Open Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturday, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Orders by phone at 606-783-0101 and online at thebakeryonmain.com.
Good afternoon with WMKY Sports. I'm Braxton Howard. The Cincinnati Reds wrapped up their series with the Brewers today at Great American Ballpark. The Reds completed the three-game sweep of Milwaukee with a 7-1 win. Luis Castillo got the win for Cincy. Zach Cozart and Jose Peraza both homered for the Reds. They now travel to New York tomorrow to start a four-game series with the Mets. Baseball has announced its 30 nominees for the 2017 Roberto Clemente Award, which goes to the player who makes significant contributions both on and off the field. Infielder Scooter Jeanette, who is best known for hitting four home runs in a game earlier this season, has been tabbed to represent the Reds.
Be able to be nominated for an award like this, it's just great as well, probably better than the four homers, because the results on the field will come and go, but this type of award is something that's more off the field, and it's just an honor to be nominated.
Baseball fans will be able to vote for the Clemente Award early next month. The honor is named for the Pittsburgh Pirates great who died in January of 1972 while delivering relief supplies to earthquake victims in Nicaragua when the plane he was on crashed. Some scores from around Major League Baseball this afternoon. Minnesota leads Tampa Bay 9-6 in the ninth inning. The Rangers are currently pounding Atlanta 11-4 in the seventh, and the Angels and A's are tied at zero in the second inning. Morehead State baseball coach Mike McGuire says former Eagle star Taylor Davis's ascend to the major leagues is big for both the catcher and his program. Davis was caught up from the minors yesterday by the Chicago Cubs before their game with Pittsburgh. McGuire believes his success in the pros will help MSU's recruiting.
We've had a lot of guys drafted in the last several years and got a lot of guys very active in professional level, but to say that, this guy, that guy, whatever is in the big leagues, those kids are a little more easily identified by recruits. And so that's where you hope that you, before it's all said and done, you have multiple big leaguers and it raises the profile of your program.
Davis is the first position player from MSU to reach the big leagues since infielder Denny Doyle in the 1970s. Starting with Liberty this Saturday and Austin Peay the following weekend, the Morehead State football team will have to face two straight fully scholarshiped FCS opponents. Head coach Rob Tenier knows that taking on those teams will be a challenge for his Eagles, and he wants to see them respond.
These next 2 weeks, I think, are always really the key, to your success moving forward. And once you get into conference play, we've got to make a lot of progress this week to next week, and then that second week to that third week, and then, eventually peak and playing really good football, consistent football, once we get into conference play.
MSU will be visiting a Liberty squad that posted a 48-45 upset win of Baylor last Saturday in Waco. The Eagles host Dayton on September the 23rd in their PFL opener. Not everyone was excited about Kentucky's 24-17 win over Southern Mississippi last weekend. Star freshman Lynn Bowden took to Twitter after the game to complain about the playing time he received during the season opener. Head coach Mark Stoops, though, says no big deal.
We'll continue to manage our players. That's what they pay me to do, and we'll be fine. Lynn's a good kid, work hard, and you know, it's not uncommon in general. I've been a lot of places with some very, very, very talented young men. The competitive nature comes out in kids sometimes, and we'll be fine. There's no issue at all.
Kentucky hosts Eastern Kentucky in its home opener this Saturday at noon. With his young team losing its last two games, Round County football coach Kelly Ford is making sure his Vikings are keeping their chins up. Ford says after Round's 51-16 weekend thrashing at the hands of Mason County, he took some time to talk to his players about staying mentally tough.
You know, we had a good team meeting just to talk about our attitudes and the adversity that happens in games and how you got to fight back. And, you know, it's all a learning tool and try to get, you know, we got to try to figure out how more harder within ourselves and with our team and just play more as a team.
Things don't get any easier for Round this week as the Vikings visit 2-0 Fleming County. The NCAA is reportedly considering a change to its transfer restriction rule. The new proposal, which could be voted on by next April, would allow all Division I athletes to be eligible immediately following their transfer to a new school if they meet a required grade point average. The NCAA currently requires student athletes to sit out a year before becoming eligible to play following a transfer. A documentary series about the Cordia High School basketball program is set to be released later this month. The 10-episode series will take a look at the racial problems the program faced during the 2013 season. Two players on that year's team were tagged in Facebook pictures of nooses and burning flags, along with multiple racial chants to the team during road games. The documentary, called Us Against the World, will be released online on September the 19th. And finally, in sports, Round County soccer teams are both at home tonight. The Lady Vikings will put their 5-0 record on the line at 6 o'clock against 6-1 Bath County. Round coach Alan Evans credits much of his team's early success to its defense, which has allowed just 5 goals so far.
Yeah, we usually start with defense, and so defense wins championships, and if the other team doesn't score, we always stand a pretty good chance of being in the game, and it's not winning. And so taking pride in how we win with the shutout, and so just really minimizing the mistakes that we make.
The 4-3 Round boys take the field at 8 as they face East Carter. That's sports for WMKY. I'm Braxton Howard.
Support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics, online at msueagles.com. Volleyball will host the Comfort Inn Invitational this weekend, matches against South Carolina State and Troy on Friday, and Middle Tennessee on Saturday. Tickets and more information from the MSU Eagle Ticket Office at 783-2386 or online at msueagles.com.
Good afternoon from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons. This is Bud Luke with your closing financial markets report for WMKY. U.S. stocks rose after two top Democratic leaders said President Donald Trump would support a debt ceiling extension and government funding plan. And the Dow Industrials did finish with a gain of 54.33 at 21,807.64. The S&P 500 was up 7.69 at 2465.54. And the NASDAQ Composite was up 17.74. finishing at 6393.31. New York Stock Exchange breadth was roughly 17 to 10 in favor of winning stocks over losers. Energy and consumer discretionary were the best performing sectors, and Trump will support Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi's plan to combine raising the debt ceiling with aid for Hurricane Harvey, according to these two Democratic leaders. However, House Speaker Paul Ryan said the Democrats' proposal is both ridiculous and unworkable. If a deal is not reached, it could lead to a government shutdown, which would be catastrophic, according to Standard & Poor's. Wall Street also paid attention to U.S. interest rates a day after the benchmark 10-year yield hit its lowest level of the year. Today, the 10-year yield finished slightly higher at 2.1%. In economic news, international trade numbers showed the U.S. trade deficit for July came in at $43.7 billion, below the expected $44.7 billion. Other data released included the IHS market PMI for August, which hit 56, and the ISM non-manufacturing index, which was in line with expectations. The Federal Reserve's Beige Book was released today, and the report found that the U.S. economy expanded at a modest to moderate pace in July through mid-August, but with little sign of an acceleration in inflation. In the commodities markets, oil was up 1% at $49.14 a barrel, while gold was down 0.4% at $1,339 an ounce. In Europe, the Stoxx 600 index was up about six or 0.06%, so stocks in general up slightly in Europe. In Asia, most markets were down as the Nikkei was down 0.14% and the Hang Seng Index was down almost 0.5%. Among Dow Industrial stocks, the best